Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, July the 20th. Welcome to Africa Link, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you for joining us on air and on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to share this audio and leave us your comments on the stories we are covering.
That's right. And coming up, local businesses in Rwanda are wary of the upcoming visit of Chinese President Xi Jinping.
East Africans must be very careful when they're dealing with China, because for countries that have dealt with the global north, of which China recently actually joined, we have seen its negative consequences over the years.
Wikipedia holds its annual summit for the first time in Africa. What does the Wikimedia Foundation aim to achieve from it?
We essentially want to make the internet look much more like the real world. The complexities, the multitudes, the richness of all of our histories and knowledges.
And German Chancellor Angela Merkel admits her government has lost public trust over the migration debacle.
Yes, we have that and much more coming up shortly after we hear what has been happening around the world.
I am Shay Meineke with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel held her annual summer press conference on Friday. She acknowledged that her government lost public trust over the EU immigration crisis and also highlighted the importance of Germany's transatlantic partnership with the United States. In a reference to U.S. President Donald Trump's recent meeting with President Putin, Merkel said such talks should happen more often.
I think the meetings between Russian and American presidents should become normal again. For reasons of disarmament alone, there are many topics that need to be discussed there, but also for many other reasons. And that's why I'm happy about every meeting. Whenever people talk, it's basically good for everyone.
Trump has reportedly invited Putin to the White House before the end of the year. Also in Germany, police were dispatched to the northern German city of Lübeck on Friday after a knife-wielding person injured at least 14 people on a bus, some seriously. According to reports, the German-born attacker has been apprehended. In Somalia, a 10-year-old girl has bled to death after undergoing female genital mutilation. An activist confirmed the death and said on Friday that the girl died in hospital a few days after her mother took her to a traditional circumciser. According to the United Nations, nearly 98% of women and girls in the Horn of African nation still undergo the outlawed practice. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. In Sweden, wildfires are continuing to blaze as an extreme heat wave affects the entire Nordic region. Swedish authorities have reportedly requested aid from Germany, France, and other EU nations to help battle the fires after several villages were evacuated. Hans Rosenberg, military head of rescue operations, said they're working to minimize the damage.
At
the moment, we have 40 soldiers at the scene. 25 are in the forest to support fire crews. We have a number assisting with logistics, and we have a management team working with the rescue services.
Elsewhere, Chinese President Xi Jinping has held talks with United Arab Emirates leaders ahead of his three-nation African tour that will take him to Senegal, Rwanda, and South Africa. In South Africa, the Chinese president is expected to attend the BRICS summit, where he will discuss financial measures with leaders of the five major emerging national economies. And finally, a group of around 75 Senegalese migrants have been found in a Mauritanian city after their boat reportedly capsized after 5 days at sea. A security source said the migrants were being treated for extreme fatigue while awaiting repatriation to their home country. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Abubakar Jalo. And a very warm welcome to you listening to us on this program. That's on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Don't forget to leave us your comment or two on the stories that we are covering.
For sure. Thank you, Chandi Kamara, listening from Sierra Leone, and from Ghana, Fidelis Mwene. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, guys. And now, China's President Xi Jinping is due to arrive in Rwanda this Sunday on a two-day state visit. The visit, the first ever for a Chinese president, has been received with mixed reactions from Rwandans.
Many Rwandans are not sure why the country, which is landlocked and has no major minerals, will be of interest to the Asian economic giant. From Kigali, our correspondent Nasra Bishumba filed this report.
Many Rwandans believe China has no genuine business interests in small countries like Rwanda. Instead, they argue that the Asian economic powerhouse wants to milk the country's resources. Clementine Uirajie, a businesswoman in Kigali, tells me her skepticism about the big Chinese focus on her country.
The news we hear about the businesses, for instance in Kenya, is that they have potential to leave a country in losses. That is why, as Rwandans are concerned, and we treat their interests with suspicion. I feel that those in charge should be careful and look at long-term benefits.
China's support to Rwanda is not new. The economic giant has recently pumped $60 million into the country's agriculture sector and rural development programs, with an additional $20 million channeled to solar projects to bring electricity to schools and health centers. Kenneth Mulindwa, a Rwandan PhD candidate in China, agrees that Rwanda should be cautious about its business ties with China.
East Africans must be very careful when they're dealing with China, because for countries that have dealt with the global north, of which China recently actually joined, we have seen its negative consequences over the years. So it leaves the recipient country in a state of repaying the loans that sometimes actually affect the social and economic development.
But not everyone is wary of the Chinese. Johnson Kangabe is a businessman who imports clothes and shoes from China.
China is a country that has really good products, and it has opened its doors to people who want to do business but don't have enough capital. They export products of very good quality to Europe and the US, and they are available for anyone who can afford. For Africans, just because we don't have enough money, we prefer to buy copies of the original products because we know that back home, the purchasing power is very low, and that's what our clients can afford. That's why most people say that everything from China is of bad quality.
So at least someone is hopeful there for this China-Rwandan relationship. And that report was compiled by Nasra Bishumba in Kigali.
And of course, China in Africa is always a debate that is going on and will never stop. And of course, Kamohelo Sauli says China is doing good. If you know the history of China, you will understand their actions. They are interested in more than just business.
Christopher Adike Sime says China has never been a friend of Africans. It has never done anything good for the good of the people of the continent. No country on earth can grow rapidly or develop very well by partnering with China.
So lots of contentious comments on that.
You can actually see some people are hopeful or they are positive, others have negative reactions.
Abu, you once wrote a piece about China in Africa.
It is a topic that interests me, and I follow it with keen interest.
Yeah. What about you, our listeners? Let us know on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave us your comments and your feedback. And now back here, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has today admitted that the recent government crisis of a migration policy in her annual summer press conference cost her coalition public trust that they should work on winning back.
Now, Merkel said she believed the debate over migration policy was an important one to have, but that the tone of the discussion was often very harsh. DW's Daniel Pels watched the press conference in Berlin, and I've been asking him about what he make of this.
Well, her government was in a very serious crisis just a short while ago. It all started after a row between her and her interior minister, Horst Seehofer, which actually first was about a minor issue. The interior minister wanted that migrants who had already been registered in another EU country should be turned back at the German borders in case they try to come to Germany and apply there for asylum as well. The Chancellor publicly said that she was not agreeing with him, and then it turned into a very serious war of words between the two. At some stage, it even looked like Mr. Seehofer's CSU party would leave the coalition, which would have meant that Chancellor Merkel would have lost her majority. So it was a very serious crisis that Germans are not used to.
Now, how can Chancellor Merkel make this right? What does she need to do to win back the people's trust?
Well, I think many Germans are tired about politics at the moment. After the general election last September, it took almost 6 months to form a government, which is a very, very long process by German standards. And then this row now between Mrs. Merkel and Mr. Seehofer broke out. And I think many Germans are thinking that there are plenty of urgent issues on the table. Healthcare reform is one, internal security is another, rents for housing is rising and rising. And so I think many Germans say, well, the government should stop fighting and should start acting and start to tackle all of these challenges.
Now, Daniel, how much public support does her government have at the moment?
Well, even Merkel admitted today that her government had lost public trust because of the crisis, and opinion polls also show that. A recent opinion poll conducted on behalf of German public TV ARD showed that 78% of Germans are unsatisfied or even very unsatisfied with the government. That is a rise by 15% compared to the last poll. But at the same time, Mrs. Merkel remains more popular than Mr. Seehofer. The same poll showed that her approval rating stood at 48%. While Mr. Seehofer's approval ratings were only at 27%.
That is our DW correspondent Daniel Pels. Over now to South Africa, where Wikipedia contributors, as we know, are few in Africa. The custodians of the free online encyclopedia and other wiki resources are gathered in the country to talk about decolonizing the internet.
Now, with that remark, the knowledge activist and co-director of the Whose Knowledge campaign opened the Decolonizing the Internet pre-conference workshop of the Wikimedia Foundation's annual Wikimania. It's the first time that the conference is being held in sub-Saharan Africa. Eddie Micah Jr. presents this report by Yulia Yaki.
Volunteer authors, librarians, artists and activists invited to the upcoming Wikimania conference in Cape Town to try to find ways to attract more black people and women to Wikimedia. Anasuya Sengupta.
We essentially want to make the internet look much more like the real world. The complexities, the multitudes, the richness of all of our histories and knowledges.
The Wikimedia projects include Wikisource, Wikidata, Wikibooks, and Wiktionary. White European and American men provide 80% of the content. Only one in every 10 wiki authors is a woman, the Wikimedia Foundation estimates. Conversely, only 14,000 of the 70,000 active Wikimedia authors come from developing countries, and only 1,000 of them are based in Africa. This tragically low number of African Wikipedians is due to a number of factors, according to Domisani Ndubani. He is the learning and evaluation strategist at Wikimedia ZA, the foundation's South African chapter.
Access to the internet is one of the biggest reasons. Data is expensive to buy, so when people do buy data, they want to do things that are interesting to them, and volunteering and editing Wikipedia might not fall in that category.
To change that, Wikimedia has taken on several Africa-wide projects. In Nigeria, the local film industry, or Nollywood, produced several short films to raise public awareness for Wikipedia. In South Africa, Joburgpedia, which centers on historic buildings, came into being, Ndubani said.
People get excited to come and edit Wikipedia about their own city that they know. And we've seen a few people come through because of that.
The Wikimedia 2018 theme is Bridging the Knowledge Gaps, the Ubuntu Way Forward. In recent years, the Wikimedia Foundation has acknowledged that knowledge doesn't only occur in written form. The question of how to integrate oral history as a Wikipedia source is a further topic of discussion at the conference.
And that report was written by Yule Yaki and presented by Eddie Micah Jr. Now, a quick response from Chokes Ojiodu. He says, only 1,000 Wikipedia editors are based in Africa out of 14,000. I used to think it is far less than that.
And we did ask, what does it take to decolonize the internet? Abdul Rashid Zakari says, affordable internet and, of course, availability of electricity. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thanks for all your responses. This is Africa Link on Live on DW. You are listening to DW's Africa Link, and my name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge all our listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I cannot mention all your names. Edrisa Sanyang, listening from Gambia. And of course, we have Mark Eden Wagang commenting about our first story on China. Thank you very much.
He's always there. I really like him for that.
Yeah, so keep those comments coming and give us your feedback. And coming up in the next 15 minutes, he defied his grandfather's wishes to follow his heart and to do his dream job. And today he's one of the leading history researchers.
What I'm doing is especially important for Africa, or the developing world generally, where politics has failed to initiate growth. And business, you know, like entrepreneurship is like the next driver of the economy.
And not to forget our sports segment, Germany's national football team, 6 answers on what exactly went wrong in Russia. We will be talking to our sports guru, Chuck Penfold.
So be sure not to miss that. But before all that, we head to Zimbabwe. Pressure continues to mount on the government to ensure a free and fair election on the 30th of this month. The opposition alleges the ruling party is planning to rig the polls and that thousands of fake names, duplicates and dead people are registered to cast the ballots.
Now, former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, along with a team known as the Elders, which comprises of Lakhdar Brahim and former Irish President Mary Robinson, today began a 3-day trip in the country to engage political stakeholders. They met with opposition parties, civic societies, and the incumbent president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Our correspondent in Harare, Privilege Musianuri, was there and filed this report.
Elections in Zimbabwe have often been contentious, especially because under former President Mugabe, allegations of fraud and intimidation marred the exercise. The Elders grouping, a brainchild of the late South African President Nelson Mandela, is keen to see a peaceful and credible election. The team spearheaded by the former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has urged Zimbabweans to hold leaders accountable and not entrust their future in politicians.
Rebuilding Zimbabwe would be the work of the nation, a nation made up of not just politicians, but also of professionals, of traders, students, workers, a nation of men and women like you. And I urge all of you to vote on 30 July to make your voices count.
Though the democratic space has opened up, the opposition raised a number of issues which they say will affect credibility of the upcoming polls. Opposition leader Nelson Chamisa spoke to journalists soon after the meeting with the Elders.
We clearly have declared that we have a process stalemate, we have a process crisis, we have an election crisis arising out of our disagreement with our colleagues in ZANU-PF, Mr. Mnangagwa, and also his paper commitment to a free and fair election without indeed committing in terms of the practical issues around the legislation, around the law.
The opposition has also raised a red flag on the conduct of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which they accuse of colluding with the ruling party to rig the elections. Claims President Mnangagwa today blatantly refuted.
Government has no role in controlling or influencing ZEC at all. They are guided by the Electoral Act of the country as well as the Constitution. And those who feel that ZEC has not complied with the law or the Constitution, our courts are open for them to deal with such issues.
Analysts view the forthcoming elections as a transition vote and hope the Elders' visit will help to foster credibility. Political analyst Rashwit Mukundu speaks.
The visit of the elders is adding a voice from the international community on the need for a more free and fair and transparent election. It also indicates a general acceptance that Zimbabwe is on the road to a political resolution of sorts.
That's a political analyst, Mukundu, from Zimbabwe. Of course, you have been giving us your feedback on that.
Yeah, and Facebook, first of all, that report was compiled by Privilege Mushanuri. And on Facebook, we've been asking, what would you tell President Mnangagwa if you were Kofi Annan?
That's a good question. I would actually ask myself, what would I tell him? Anyway, Aliwi Jalo says, respect the will of the people. There is life after politics.
And another Jalo here, this time Ibrahim from Gambia, he says, free and fair elections. Make available equal chances for all taking part in the election.
Hassan Abigira from Tanzania says, I would advise President Mnangagwa to respect human rights at all times as well as advocate for free and fair elections.
And Ken from Nairobi says, Kofi Annan is cunning enough. He needs no advice for any messages in this kind of mission.
And he continues to say, remember Kenya in 2008. So lots of feedback. Thank you very much. Continue giving us your comments.
African Roots, the researchers.
I'm sure most of you know the pressure from family members to choose certain career paths, especially when they want you to become a doctor or a lawyer. Well, that is the story of one young researcher from Botswana.
I guess we all know that. Well, had it been for his grandfather, Lloyd Melusu Maphosa would probably be a lawyer by now. But the 29-year-old PhD student knows that he has made the right choice in studying history. TW's Julia Yaki caught up with him, and her report is now presented by Isaac Mugabe.
It all started with a school award for best performance in his history class. Then 17-year-old Lloyd Melusu Maphosa won stationery and a gift voucher at his school in Blawayo. His career path was paved, not to the delight of all family members.
My grandfather and I have a very close relationship. So he asked me, what is it that you think you're going to do with history? Why don't you do law or something? But then, you know, I just followed my heart. I mean, this is why I'm here. All of the rumors, all of the fights,
but we always find a way to make it out alive. With being here, Lloyd means his residency in Stellenbosch, South Africa. This is where a PhD scholarship granted by the Gerda Henkel Foundation has taken him. Here, he devotes his time analyzing joint stock companies that took up business as far back as the 1800s in the former Cape Colony, an area that is now part of the Republic of South Africa. Presently, the 29-year-old is busy comparing data of 300 companies, a tedious but profitable task, he says.
What I'm doing is especially important for Africa, or the developing world generally, where politics has failed to initiate growth. And business, you know, like entrepreneurship, is like the next driver of the economy.
Lloyd hopes that his research on the successes and failures of past companies can produce useful data for modern African economies. He is proud to be the first historian and the first African to ever dig into these specific archives. Being from Africa gives him an advantage over European-based economists, he says.
I'm the man on the ground, you know. You know, when you're a historian and you're working on a project that is outside your environment, there are certain things that you may overlook, you know, because you're not familiar with the environment. But then I am African and I feel I'm going to touch all those aspects, you know, big and small, and magnify them in my work.
Making discoveries and drawing new connections captivates him. Besides the inspiration his research brings him, Lloyd enjoys the exchange with other academics. One of his highlights was participating in a business summer school at the University of Tübingen, Germany.
Yeah, I met great minds there. You know, I mean, intelligent people, smart academics. You know, it's always nice to be in an environment with such vibrant people, you know, creative as well.
These personal encounters once again rewarded him for following his heart and pursuing the path he started way back at his school in Blawayo.
I feel, you know, I wouldn't have had those opportunities if I had pursued what my grandfather would have said. So I really don't regret, and I look forward to what my study has in store for me in the future.
His decision may not have been an easy one, but sometimes, so it seems, it's good not to heed your grandfather's advice.
Yeah, that song, We Could Be Anything, we want to be wrapping up that report by Julia Yaki, brought to you as part of the African Root series, a project realized in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation.
Now let's talk some sports. The dust may have settled on the 2018 FIFA World Cup, an unpredictable tournament that had many twists and turns. However, for many teams, it's time to finally reflect on what went right. Well, in the case of Germany, what went wrong?
Yes, you are right, Abu, because Germany did not just lose the title, but were eliminated early in the group stages, which has gotten stakeholders scratching their heads as they seek answers on the disaster that was. Joining us now is Chuck Penfold from our sports desk. To start off, Chuck, what do you think was the problem?
It seems to me it had more to do with attitude than anything else. They weren't as mobile as they used to be. You know, a couple of years ago, everybody thought, including me, that when it was really important, when these games were for real, that they would suddenly flip a switch and they'd suddenly be the Germany of old. And somehow they never managed to do that. And the best example I can think of, I think it was the last game against South Korea where they got knocked out at the group stage, which I didn't believe was going to happen even during the game. There was a isolation shot of Sami Khedira in the midfield. And there was somebody on the right, I think it might have been Thomas Müller, who wanted to pass him the ball. He wanted Khedira to go forward to get into space so he could play him the ball. He was motioning to him. And Khedira was basically hiding behind the South Korean defender. Whether it was because he was fearful of making a mistake, I don't know. But he didn't want the ball. And when I saw that, I said, that's in their heads. There's something really wrong there. Because he's usually a dominant midfielder.
There has been a lot of blame game going on. Some are pointing fingers at Mesut Özil, a German-born player with Turkish roots, because he and his teammate posed for photos with Turkish President Erdogan before the World Cup. Do you think this ruined the morale of the team before the World Cup?
Yeah, that's been really unfortunate and surprising. And this drew a lot of criticism in Germany. Particularly, I think it was Gundogan who wrote on the jersey, "To my president." The fact he said my president is a real bone of contention because he's playing for Germany. His president should be Frank-Walter Steinmeier, president of Germany. So that was criticized, and I think the DFB maybe didn't deal with it correctly. They sort of talked about it a little bit, said the players have been talked about, no real sanctions against them, sort of tried to sweep it under the carpet before the tournament. But this issue seems to have been a distraction, and it's still going on now. It's raised the whole issue in this country of integration. Of course, these two guys are of Turkish origin, born in Germany, but of Turkish origin. So it's been a really difficult issue, and I think the DFB hasn't handled it very well.
Of course, there are many high-profile meetings taking place at the German football headquarters to discuss the future of the Nationalmannschaft, as we call it. What do you think should be the focus if they want to bounce back?
I think what has to happen now is he's probably got to just use these next year, year and a half, to really bring through a new generation and get rid of some of these older players.
So, Chuck, after all, it was France. Could you have guessed that?
Yeah, I predicted France.
Oh, wow.
I don't get things right in predictions very often, but I did get it right this time. Yeah, that was my prediction right from the start.
And of course, a lot has happened since France won the World Cup, because half of the players, or rather three quarters, are players with migration background, which has raised questions on, of course, debate on social media. Should we even be discussing this in 2018 and in sports?
Well, people can discuss whatever they want, of course. It surprised me a little bit because if you look back to the last time France won the World Cup in 1998, it was also a team made up of a lot of people with migration backgrounds, a lot of people with African backgrounds. And that was seen back then as sort of a beacon of integration, of how integrated society France had become. Now it's a different time. There's sort of a rise of the right in Europe. And I think politicians, mainstream politicians, have to deal with that.
That's our sports correspondent, Chuck Penfold. And commenting on that, Barlen Brooks says Europe just get to grips with migration being a part of this continent and a real and irreversible thing. And last one from David Olson, who says also in the U.S., sports players with an African heritage dominate, but a large percentage of the U.S. population.
Now, let's give you to some of what you've been saying to this story in Kenya about Ruth Kamanda, a 24-year-old who stabbed her husband to death because she claimed that he knowingly infected her. He cheated on her and infected her with HIV.
Yeah, and Peter Momanyi says so many people have been sentenced to death for committing murder in Kenya. Why is this case any different from the rest? Well, and he's saying about Amnesty International, where were they before that?
And that's in response to the question we've been asking, is the death penalty outdated or are there instances where it should be used? And Niam Mba says everyone deserves a second chance.
Yeah, so thank you very much for your feedback and keeping company. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Abubakar Jallow. Bye now.